are back. Welcome to our monthly podcast, A Call to Foster. My name is Shasta Miller, and I'm a field sport manager with the Missouri Children's Division. And my co-host is...
I'm Jessica Huckstep, and I'm a supervisor with the Southeast Region Resource Unit.
So I'm really excited about this month's interviewee. We have a special guest with us, and he is currently a foster parent. Would you mind to introduce yourself, Jason?
Hi, my name is Jason Sutter.
And Jason, how long have you been a foster parent?
A little over 10 years now.
10 years. Wow. So we have some experience. That's really great. And Jason, is it just you? Or do you have a partner?
I'm married, and my wife, Sheila, she's working today, but she wanted to make sure that we did this so we could help recruit.
And I really appreciate that, Jason. And we just kind of wanted to start off with, you know, what led you to become a foster parent?
Initially, we were wanting to look into adoption, and adopting through the state seemed like it would be something we could do. And while we were taking the classes for fostering and learning about adoption, we decided we would go ahead and foster too.
Really? So what do you think changed your mind from wanting to just do adoption to foster? Do you know?
Well, it was a combination of the possibility of getting infants that way, because so many children come into care and it takes a long time for them to get to where they're adoptable. But if you foster, you're able to start off sometimes with newborns, and that gives you a chance to start at the beginning with some of the kids.
Right, definitely. So in you said 10 years you've been a foster parent?
Yes.
So what kind of age ranges of kiddos have you had in your home?
The oldest is 15, and the youngest was one day old.
Oh, wow.
So you've had a range, right?
Yes.
Definitely. So what would you say is your favorite age range?
Probably between 1 and 5. That seems to be the age where they're learning some new things and everything's bright and shiny and wonderful for them. And it's kind of fun to get to see that again.
So Jason, 10 years is a long time to be fostering. Approximately how many foster kiddos have been placed in your home?
We've had a dozen foster kids through the home now.
Oh, dozen. So tell me about, I kind of want to go back to, you had said something earlier about you, when you were sharing your journey and when you were in training and hearing about adoption and fostering. Was there anything that you learned during the training section of fostering that helps you decide to, you know, I don't want to just adopt. We want to foster too.
We just kind of had to, you know, get it in our head about how much need there was. We didn't understand that there was such a lack of foster homes and that there were that many kids who were, you know, really looking for good places to stay and homes that were able to work with them and their families. And you know, once we heard the stories, we kind of felt like we were in a place where we could do more to help than just, you know, adopt for ourselves.
Yeah, I think hearing the stories, I guess for me personally, is probably the most impactful. But I'm going to ask you, if you have a story to share with our audience about your fostering journey and how it's impacted you personally, emotionally, just a story of a placement, really, really anything.
I think it was just learning about how each child is so unique and different. You know, we've had kids come into the house that seemed happy and relaxed and like they were just perfectly fine with being in a strange home in a strange place. And we've had kids that seemed like they were terrified. And honestly, when it worked out, it seemed like the ones that were the happiest were the ones that were the ones best at hiding their feelings. And so finding out how to connect with each child, how to let them finally get to where they can trust you, and being able to make progress from there, that was probably the best memories, is when they finally open up and when you finally can start, you know, seeing where they're making progress.
I think that's really, really great advice, Jason. I want to tap into that a little deeper, if you don't mind. So sure. you said something I think really important is every child is unique and different, and you have a mix, right, of kids who come in who are very fearful. It's, you know, they're placed in a stranger's home. And then you have those kids who are kind of happy. But yet those are the kiddos who kind of hide their emotions and feelings. How have you and your wife, through fostering, what techniques have you used in order to really connect with our unique kiddos?
Okay. Well, for the first night, you know, right off the bat, just to kind of ease their tension a little bit, is we let them make a lot of their own choices. You know, we had new blankets in the closet that they could pick from, and we let them pick their own blanket. And we had stuffed animals in one of the playrooms that were new toys that they could pick from, so they'd have their own stuffed animal and their own blanket their first night. You know, if they brought anything personal with them, we made sure that it had a special place and made sure that they felt comfortable that their things were going to be safe and that we weren't going to throw them out or you know, get rid of anything that they cared about. And just really tried to make them feel like they had some choice, some power in the situation. You know, let them pick the first meal, let them hang up any pictures they had with them. Because I think that was key to making them feel like in the situation where they're completely powerless, that they had some choices, that they had someone who cared what they thought.
I have goosebumps because I think you just hit the nail on the head where exactly what you said with our kiddos, that they are powerless, right? They have no control. They have no control of what's happening to them. It's scary. And I love what you said. Sometimes it's the simple things, you know, picking out their own blanket. So important that you value and respect the personal items that they bring in their home, because that's personal, right? And I really love hearing that. But I think that's really good advice for our future families who might want to foster. And sometimes it's the little things. And I think you just gave us a lot of good examples of little things to give our foster kiddos choices and power, you know, within reason. So I love that.
And Jason, I really loved when you mentioned about letting them choose the first meal. Because we hear a lot from kids, you know, they go into a strange place and they don't know where in their own home, they didn't know where their next meal came from. So then they're even extra scared when they go into a strange home. They don't know when they're going to get fed or what they're going to get fed. And that's very impactful that you guys do that. I just want to applaud you.
Yeah, absolutely. Jason, you'd mentioned earlier that you fostering for 10 years, you've had quite an age range of kiddos placed in your home. And you said you prefer like the ages 1 through 5. Can you talk a little bit more about that and maybe why you love that age and maybe some challenges that come with that age group?
Okay. Well, with the younger kids, it's just kind of fun to watch them learn new things because they're just, everything's amazing to them. They see something new that they've never seen before, the first time they see a turtle or something in the yard. And it's just kind of like rediscovering the joy in life again, you know, watching them see things. And it makes you feel a little bit young again. And I mean, there's sometimes tantrums and there's learning to deal with big feelings and their emotions and learning not to hit. And so there's both sides of the coin. They learn all the great things and they're having to learn all the behavior things that they have to follow. But for me, I think that's the thing that makes me feel the youngest is when I have the little ones running around and they're showing me a new way to look at the world.
And we need that sometimes, don't we, Jason? We need to feel younger. So in those you mentioned, you know, in the kind of hard times when they throw tantrums or things like that, how do you and your wife handle that? Or how do you structure your home to handle those outbursts or behavioral issues?
Okay. Usually it's just making sure that they have some space and, you know, not necessarily letting them run wild, but, you know, having them in an area by themselves where things are calm. And just being patient and giving them a little bit of time to wear themselves down, because it's not necessarily just saying you're in a timeout, sit in this bench, but if you give them an area to be in and they can move within that area, and they can get their feelings out. But then when they start to calm down and they're ready to talk, you know, we're there for them. And we sit there and talk about, you know, how they got that upset and what they could do to maybe try to keep that from happening the next time. And it kind of takes a lot of time and a lot of patience, because, you know, you really do have to spend the time talking and teaching for them to really understand, you know, what just happened to them, because sometimes they don't know why they're upset. They don't know why they got so mad. So walking them through that's a really, really important step, I think, for us, in making sure they understood what was going on.
Yeah. So as you're talking about this, I feel like as a foster parent, you wear many hats, right? You're a parent, you're a teacher, you're a counselor, you're a coach, you're lots of things. And I keep hearing this throughout from lots of foster families we've spoken to: patience. Gotta have patience. And then you also talked about having the freedom, right? Giving them, again, freedom and choice. Even when they're throwing a tantrum, right? You give them their own space and you let them calm down so that you can calm down. And I think this is really good advice, not just for foster parents, but for any parent in the world. But I'm really curious on, because as you know, Jason, you're a foster parent, so you deal with lots of different professionals, right? You deal with not only Children's Division, but you deal with therapists. You deal with the courts. You deal with our juvenile office. You deal with parent attorneys, your own attorneys, guardian ad litem, lots of different people. I'm really wanting to hear from you, especially with the young kiddos. You know, typically they go to therapy, right? And typically it's play therapy. Do you have an example of a time when you've had a kiddo placed in your home that was going to therapy and maybe it was a struggle for them? And if so, how did you work around that with that? How did you kind of deal with that?
The older kids actually seem to have a little more struggle with therapy. The younger kids, they seem to think that going is fun, especially if you make it sound like fun. We talk about going to see their friend and whatever the therapist's name is, and they just go and they talk and they have the playtime, or if they're actually doing talk therapy, then, you know, they're having their discussion. But that's usually something we try to make into a fun time. We go get ice cream afterwards, or we have something planned, so we go do that, and then there's sort of a reward associated with it. And so it's usually a fun time for them, and they look forward to going to therapy. Now, some of the older kids, when they resisted it, they just, you know, would say, I don't need it. You know, I'm not crazy. And we would just have to sit down and explain to them, you know, you don't have to be crazy to see a therapist. You just have to have someone who's there to listen to you, who you can talk to freely, who you can say anything you want to, who you can even talk to them about us. You know, it's just your place to say whatever you want that you need to say and work through whatever you're feeling, you know, without the consequence of us, you know, as parents saying, oh, well, we don't like that. You know, with a therapist, you can say whatever you want and then explore it from there. And that gives you a little bit of freedom that you don't have at home. And usually once they get that idea of, hey, I can dish on anybody I want, you know, they start to cooperate a little better.
Yeah. That's really vulnerable for you to say that, Jason, because I think that's hard, right? And to give them permission that, hey, it's okay if you talk to the therapist about how we're parenting and what we're doing. I think that's really insightful. And I think that's really good advice, because it probably does help them open up and feel more comfortable. And I also like what you said about keeping it fun for the little ones. And I think that's so important. And I love that you schedule time to go have ice cream afterwards, and it's a positive thing. And we all need therapy at some point in our lives, don't we? I mean, I'm not ashamed to say it. And I think.
Right. And I'm not either. And I was just thinking, Jason, how you said maybe a child you were referencing to said that, you know, I'm not crazy, I don't have to go to therapy. And that's the stigma that's out there, out in the world. You know, that mental health in any, whatever avenue of service, whether it's therapy, whether it's psychotherapy, there's so many different avenues that no, they're not crazy. And it's just, that's, you're doing your own part in trying to help with that stigma. Yeah. That I think is wonderful.
So, Jason, I'm curious, because you've had, you know, as old as a 15-year-old in your home, which we would consider in the older youth category. Do you have an example or a story that you could share with us in the audience regarding a tough older youth that you've been challenged with being placed in your home and how you dealt with that?
We actually had teenagers that grew up with us, you know, the ones that we adopted and became teenagers while they're here in our home. And it's just that certain stage where they are dealing with hormones and they're dealing with changes in their lives. And I don't think parents or teenagers, either one, realize how powerful that physical change is for them and how much it affects their behavior and their attitude, how much they need to sleep. And so my wife and I, when we started having trouble and, you know, having a little bit of back talk, a little disrespect, and trying to figure out where it was coming from, you know, we did a lot of reading on puberty and what happens and what kind of changes they're going through. And it doesn't really help to tell them what's happening, but it does help us to understand, you know, this is where this is coming from. You know, it's testosterone can make you angry. Extra estrogen can make you weepy. And so we tried to use that to help us be a little more patient, because we understand it's a small window that they're going through and that things are going to get better. And that's what kind of held us through the rough first part of that teenage years.
Yeah. I have so many questions, but I think what you said is really great advice regarding reading up on teenagers, what's going on with them mentally and physically during puberty. And we probably don't do that enough. I think sometimes in the foster care system, and sometimes when we have kiddos placed with foster homes, when foster kiddos start to act up, quote unquote, or have behavioral issues, we kind of tend to revert to, oh, it's because of their trauma, or it's because they've had a rough growing up. And maybe it's not. I think you just highlight something that maybe it's just normal, right? Normal puberty, normal teenage things. And we should probably learn and talk about that more. So I think that's really, really insightful. And then I also wanted to talk about, you said you had teenagers and then you ended up adopting them. At what age did they first be placed in your home? And then at what age did you end up adopting them?
The first one that was placed with us was a 5-year-old, and we ended up adopting her when she was 8. And then my oldest son, who's a teenager, we had him come to us about 6 years old, and his didn't take us long. It was 7 when he was adopted.
Okay.
And that's great to hear, because sometimes we do hear, you know, that getting to that adoption phase can take years and just a drawn out process. So that's just so great to hear that in both those kids, it wasn't a really long drawn out process.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. Let me ask you this too. Being that they were 8 and 7 when they were adopted, did they understand, Jason, kind of what was happening, what adoption was, what needed to take place, and what that meant?
That was one of the things my wife and I talked about a lot. You know, we wanted them to understand what was happening and be part of that choice. And we worried about it so much to start with our first adoption and our oldest girl. We actually went to therapy with her, and we talked to the therapist, and I'm like, we need to make sure that she understands what's going on, that she's making this choice of free will, and that, you know, we're not making her feel pressured. And so, you know, can you help us through this conversation? And it was a really simple conversation. We made it way more complicated than it needed to be, but she talked to her about adoption and had her explain back to us, you know, what was adoption to her? What did it mean? And, you know, just walked her through it. And by the time the session was done, we all felt like, hey, we've reached the right decision, and, you know, everybody understands what's happening, and we can go forward, you know, and that made us feel a lot better. So with the, the next adoption, we had that conversation at home and, you know, gave them the option to talk to somebody else if they wanted to, if they wanted to talk to the caseworker. And we just did that with each of our kids, you know, for, you know, with the babies. We didn't get to have that conversation, but they didn't seem to object.
So right.
So how many have you adopted?
We have actually adopted five.
Five. Oh, my goodness. That just melted my heart. Like, you can't see me, but, like, I have the biggest smile on my face.
Yeah.
How old are they now?
The oldest is 15, and then I have a 13-year-old, an 11, a 9, and a 6-year-old.
You have a busy household.
Yeah.
Good for you guys. I think I love to hear stories about adoption because that's just one more kiddo that's found permanency in a lifelong family. So, Jason, thank you. Thank you for doing that and really just falling in love with these kiddos, right? I mean, that's really what it boils down to in my head. But
Jason, I'm just sitting here as Justice talking, and I'm just curious, you know, you've adopted five kiddos, and I was just wondering, you guys still do your adoptive children, and you still have a relationship with the biological parents?
We have kind of a mix. My 9-year-old has some biological family that we're still in contact with, and her mother has since actually went through programs and therapies where she's doing okay, and she's actually started her second round at family, and she has kids of her own now. And so now that she's doing okay, we've been in contact with the biological grandmother, and she sends her birthday presents, and they talk on FaceTime and have a relationship. And her and her mother have had a couple exchanges back and forth, but they're both kind of a little nervous about, you know, having that conversation, but we do still have some when we can. You know, there's some that we can't, don't know where the parents are, and there's some that we still have ongoing issues that we can't allow the children to talk to them. But when we can, it's nice to be able to stay in contact and be able to have all those questions that they have answered, you know, health history and where did I get this? And it was always fun to see some of the habits she had were things that her grandmother also did. So seeing that biological connectedness is kind of neat for us.
Thank you, Jason. That was just so wonderful to hear. Because as you know, like you said, these kiddos are always going to be connected to their biological family, whether they're adopted or not. And I just want to applaud you. And then I had a question. I forgot it.
I have a question. So, oh. Jason, you know, I think sometimes as foster parents, and I'm asking for raw, transparent honesty here, okay? Because I think it's just going to help our listeners. Sometimes it's hard and challenging to work with biological families when you have the kiddos placed in your home, right? You see the day-to-day impact it's had on their development and the trauma that they've been exposed to. And I can only imagine how challenging that is. With that in mind, Jason, how have you dealt with some of your inner feelings about that? And really, what I'm hearing you say is you believe that biological family and that connection matters. So tell us about how you've dealt with maybe those struggles, feeling of those struggles, and how you've kind of moved forward from that.
I think when I started out, I was all about control. You know, I like to micromanage my life. I had schedules and I had plans about how things were supposed to be. And I think as a foster parent, you kind of have to realize that you can't have as much control as you would like. And you have to be able to understand that there's going to be decisions made that's going to be outside of your ability to affect them. Whether, you know, it's things that happen at court, whether it's things that happen with visitation. But being flexible and allowing the system to work, you know, allowing things to work makes for a much more effective, you know, kind of situation for everyone. Because if you're in conflict with the family, if you're in conflict with the caseworker, if you're always upset about what's happening at court, you know, it's not going to change anything that's happened, but it's going to make you a lot more stressed out. So for my wife and I, realizing that we had to not necessarily control the situation, but we had to make the best of what we were given and to try to get the best result for the kids we're working with. You know, whether we always agree with the decision, whether we always agreed with the plan, it was more a matter of what is it we can do for these kids that will help them on their next step.
Definitely, Jason. Like, just being flexible is the number one thing that I know I say to foster parents all the time. You have to be flexible in whatever avenue. But I was just, you were talking about how you stay in contact with the biological parents. What would you say to a prospective foster parent worried about having contact with biological family or biological parents after the kiddo's adopted? Like, what would you say to them?
Well, from my experience, it's actually been some of the more useful connections that I've had, because even if it wasn't a situation where the parent was going to be in the child's life for an extended period of time, you know, after the adoption, or if the TPR had even already happened, there was still a lot of information that we could exchange. You know, I always had a list of questions, you know, what kind of family history do you have? What are some things you would like your child to know as they grow up? What are some things you think are important that you want them to know about your family? And it was just a really good way to not only give them a chance to either say goodbye or connect with us, to realize that we actually cared about, you know, how their child was raised, about how they saw their parents. And so for me, that benefit of having that information that I wouldn't have got if I hadn't met with them face to face, if I hadn't tried to connect with them and get in, you know, get that conversation going, I would have missed out on so much that my kids would ask me later. They're always going to have questions, and if I don't take the time to get the answers when I can, I may not be able to get them for them later. So
yeah,
I think it's really important to have that connection, even if it's not something that's going to be permanent in your mind.
Yes, absolutely. Now, Jason, I heard through the grapevine that you and your wife are co-trainers. Is that right?
I actually do co-training with state workers usually, or contract workers. My wife doesn't really like to speak in public, so she supports me in a lot of other ways.
Jason, I can see why. I can see why you're a co-trainer. I think many, many people and many individuals who are interested in fostering should talk to you, because you've got some great insight and you have the experience. You and your wife have the experience to back it up.
For the excuse me. And for the audience that doesn't know, a co-trainer with our state foster parent curriculum, us workers, children's division worker trains, but we also have to have a co-trainer. So Jason is saying that he's a co-trainer, and you're a co-trainer for the foster parent curriculum, Strong, is that correct?
Strong, and I've also did STARS before that. So I've had two different curriculums, and I kind of take stories and things from both of them, you know, whenever I'm doing my part of it. But yeah, we always had kind of a shortage of co-trainers in this area, which limited the amount of classes they could schedule. So when you have a shortage of foster parents and then you don't have the teachers to teach the class, that was a problem that I could help with. You know, if I could become a co-trainer, then they could schedule all the classes they needed, and all the people who were interested in becoming a foster parent would have a chance to take classes more often. And I think that's something any foster parent who would love to see is more help out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I believe, Jason, you and your wife are like the ideal, and you know, maybe not ideal, but you guys are a very good example of what you understand the foster care system. You understand the kids placed in your home. You understand the challenges and the joys that comes with fostering. I think I'm so happy to hear that you're a co-trainer, because you've got some really great insight. We're starting to wrap up, but I really do want to ask like one final question of you. So Jason, if I was an individual who came up to you and said, you know, I'm really interested in fostering, but I'm really scared and I've heard some really awful things. What advice would you give me?
Most of the time, I think I would just tell them, you know, my story, you know, what I know for sure, how my kids have been for me and the experiences we've had sending kids home. And I always tell foster parents who ask me, yes, there are times when you get your heart broke because you get attached and they go home. But in the reality of things, that's what those kids needed. They needed someone to love them. They needed someone to connect with them. And if they go home and you're not a little bit sad, you didn't do your job.
Yes, absolutely.
Definitely, you didn't do your job if they weren't.
I have quotes around that. That's well said, Jason. Very well said. Do you have any questions for us? You know, Jessica and I, we do work for Children's Division, so I just wanted to take the opportunity to see if you had any questions for us.
Not that I can think of right now.
We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, Jason. Every time we talk to a foster family, but you specifically, you always re-energize us here in the agency to do better and to keep talking and doing these podcasts and hearing from other foster families. Because I think you and I both know the best recruiters are people who are doing the work, and you're one of those. So thank you for your service. Thank you for being our co-trainers, and just thank you for joining our podcast.
No problem. Anytime.
Thank you, Jason. We'll
talk
soon.
Thank you, Jason.
All right. Bye.
You know, I bet he's a really good co-trainer.
I bet he is too. He's not my unit's co-trainer, but he is for the Southeast. And his voice catches me. Like I want to pay attention. Yeah. And he's soothing. He just has that voice.
Well, and he hit on so many things that, I mean, I really didn't even feel the need to like go in depth because he hit so many good things that I was like hoping that he would say, and he did. Like to talk about how important biological connections were. He talked about teenagers and even gave us, you know, some insight and some coaching on let's read about puberty. Like how simple is that?
Like so simple, definitely. Mm-hmm. But about that education piece and how they do wear so many hats.
Yeah.
Like they do all the work. They're not just foster parents. They're teachers.
In 10 years of that.
10 years.
That's the people we need and want.
Right. And especially for our foster parent, foster ambassador program.
Yeah.
Like he would.
But you know, I didn't tap into that in this because something in my gut says, you know, maybe we wouldn't go in, but I want to follow up with him after and inquire if he is an ambassador, because if not, they should be.
Exactly. They should be, because 10 years and plus just the piece that just keeps popping up in my head is when the first day of the placement, blanket of their own, mm-hmm. letting them pick the food.
Simple things.
Just simple things that helps that child know that it's going to be okay or know where their next meal is coming from.
And to he's adopted five. They've adopted five kids. That's amazing.
And they're still a foster home.
And they adopted them. I mean, it sounds like he said they adopted them in, you know, 7-8 years, and they literally kept with it through it throughout the whole journey. Because I tell you, we have an issue with kids who have been adopted coming back into the system because of behaviors, because of whatnot. So I'm really happy to hear that they got through the teenage years, they stuck it out, and they had some really good advice to share.
I'm just, my heart goes out to them mm-hmm. that they took the call to foster, you know, for their first placement, and they're still doing it.
Yep. I love it. I love it. Anyway, very, very, very insightful. We'll talk to them again.
Yeah.
So on that note, audience and anyone who might be listening, and I hope all of you are, if you feel led to foster, you can contact 1-800-554-2222 or any local Children's Division office and ask to speak to a licensing staff member. We can get you connected, get you in training, and rock and roll. If you know someone, maybe you're not interested in fostering, but if you know someone who might be, give them that contact number. You can also search us online at dss.mo.gov. /CD. You can also find the Call to Foster podcast on Spotify, DSS, Facebook, Instagram, Apple, YouTube, and potentially some other social media platforms. So please share and subscribe. Get the word out. We need more foster families in the state of Missouri. Spread the word and change a kiddo's life.
See you later.
At the Department of Social Services, we are dedicated to inspiring more Missourians to help us provide quality, loving homes to the children in our care. Help us reach our future foster parents by leaving a review, subscribing, and sharing this podcast on your social media platforms.